If Dilov had been a dog, he would have been growling. Probably frothing at the mouth as well, Raythan decided. The Arteth was even worse than he usually was after visiting Elantris's wall. Raythan turned to look back at the city. They had nearly reached their chapel, but the enormous wall surrounding Elantris was still visible behind them. Atop it somewhere was the infuriating young woman who had somehow gotten the best of him this day.
She was magnificent.
Like any of his kind, he had an unquestioned prejudice when it came to the Teoish people. Teod had banished Dorethi ministers from the country 50 years ago following a small misunderstanding and had never consented to let them back in.
Yes, she is impressive.
She is accursed above all others. A member of the only race hated by Lord Yadeth.
Yadeth hates no one but those who hate him.
They do hate him.
Most of them have never even heard his name preached, Arteth. Their king, yes. He is most likely cursed for his injunction against Dorethi priests. However, the people haven't even been given a chance. Once Ser Alon falls to Lord Yadeth, then we can worry about penetrating Teod. The country won't last long with the rest of the civilized world pitted against it.
It will be destroyed. Yadeth will not wait while our Arteths preach his name against the unyielding walls of Teoish hearts.
Lord Yadeth can only come when all men are united beneath Fjordo rule, Arteth. That includes the ones in Teod.
Perhaps. But there is another way. Lord Yadeth will rise when every living soul is united. The Teoish will be no obstacle if we destroy them! When the final Teo heaves his last sigh, when the Elantrians have been burned from the face of Sikla, then all men will follow Wern. Then Yadeth will come.
Fortunately, his loss to the Teoish girl hadn't been as complete as she probably assumed. When Raythan arrived at the meeting place, a large suite in one of Kaye's finest inns, many of the nobles he had invited were waiting for him. The speech on Elantris's wall had been only one part of his plan to convert these men.
Greetings, lords.
Don't pretend everything is fine between us, priest.
Idane was one of the younger, more vocal nobles.
You promised your words would bring power. It appears powerful confusion was the only thing that was produced.
Ah. My speech baffled one simple-minded girl. It is said the fair princess has trouble remembering which is her right hand and which is her left. I wouldn't have expected her to understand my speech. Don't tell me that you, Lord Idane, were similarly lost.
Of course not, my lord. It's just that I fail to see how conversion could grant us power.
The power, my lord, comes in the perception of your enemy.
Raythan strolled through the room, the ever-present Dilov at his side, and chose a seat. Sure enough, Idane and the others soon found their seats as well. Raythan rested his elbows on the armrest, then clasped his hands and regarded his audience in silence. His brow furled slightly as his eyes fell on one face near the back of the room. The man was older, perhaps in his late 40s, and wore rich clothing. The most telling part of the man's appearance was the large purplish birthmark on the left side of his neck and face. Raythan hadn't invited Duke Telrai to the meeting. The Duke was one of the most powerful men in Aerilon. Raythan would have to speak carefully this night. A powerful alliance could be his reward.
Well?
Idane fidgeted beneath Raythan's stare.
Who are they, then? Who do you perceive as our enemy?
The Elantrians.
The Elantrians have been dead for a decade, Fjordel. They are hardly a threat.
No, my young lord. They live on.
If you can call it that.
I don't mean those pitiful mongrels inside the city. I mean the Elantrians that live in the people's minds. Tell me, Idane. Have you ever met a man who thought the Elantrians would return someday?
Well,
Iadon's rule is far from absolute. He is more of a regent than a king. The people don't really expect him to be monarch for long. They're waiting for their blessed Elantrians to return. Many call the Riolt false, a kind of test to see who will remain true to the old pagan religion. You have all heard how people speak of Elantris in whispers. Aedon doesn't see the danger. He doesn't see that his leadership is suffered rather than accepted. As long as the people have a physical reminder of Elantris' might, they will fear. And as long as they fear something more than they fear their king, none of you will have power. Your titles came from the king. Your power is connected to him. If he is impotent, then you are as well. Shu-Karath doesn't recognize the danger. The Karathi do nothing to denounce the Elantrians, and therefore perpetuate the public's hope. Irrational though it may be, the people want to believe Elantris will be restored. They imagine how grand it used to be, their memories enhanced by a decade of stories. It is human nature to believe that other places and other times are better than the here and now. If you ever want to hold true domination over Erelon, my dear noble friends, then you must abolish your people's foolish hopes. You must find a way to free them from Elantris' grip.
Young Idain nodded enthusiastically. Hraethen pursed his lips with dissatisfaction. The boy noble had been too easily swayed. As was often the case, the most outspoken man was the least discerning. Ignoring Idain, Hraethen judged the expressions of the others. They were thoughtful, but not convinced. The more mature Telrai sat quietly at the back, rubbing the large ruby on one of his rings, watching Hraethen with a musing expression.
Tell me, men of Erelon, have you traveled the countries of the East? If you have visited the powerful countries of the East, my friends, then you know of the influence available to those who align themselves with the Dorethi priesthood.
Influence was perhaps an understatement. No king ruled east of the Dothraki Mountains unless he professed allegiance to Shu-Dareth.
Enough wordplay, priest.
Ramier was one of the younger nobles. He was a hawk-faced second son of an unimportant baron, a man with a sharp Aeonic nose and a reputation for straightforwardness, a reputation he apparently deserved.
I want promises. Are you saying that if we convert to Dorethi, you will grant us greater holdings?
Yardith rewards his followers.
And how will he reward us? Shu-Dareth holds no power in this kingdom, priest.
Lord Yardith holds power everywhere, my friend. It is true that as of yet, he has few followers in Erelon. The world, however, is dynamic, and few things can stand against Yardith's empire. Remember Dúladel, my friends. Erelon has remained untouched for so long because we haven't bothered to spare the effort it would take to convert her. The first problem is Elantris. Remove it from the people's minds and they will gravitate toward Shu-Dareth. Shu-Karath is too tranquil, too indolent. Yardith will grow in the people's awareness, and as he does, they will look for role models within the ranks of the aristocracy. Men who hold to the same ideals as themselves.
And then we will be rewarded?
The people will never suffer rulers who don't believe as they do. As recent history has shown, my friends, kings and monarchies are hardly eternal.
It will take time to unseat an entire religion and set up a new one in its place.
Weyrine was a thin man with a head of nearly white blonde hair. Weyrine was known for his strict piety. Hraethen had been rather surprised when he accompanied his cousin Idain to the meeting. It appeared that Weyrine's renowned faith was less a matter of religious fervor than it was of political advantage. Winning him and his reputation would be a great help to Hraethen's cause.
You would be surprised, young Lord Weyrine. Until very recently, Dúladel was the seat of one of the world's oldest religions. Now, as far as Fjordal recorders can tell, that religion has been completely wiped out, at least in its pure form.
Yes, but the collapse of the Yeska religion and the Dúladan Republic are events that had been building for years, perhaps even centuries.
But you cannot deny that when that change in power occurred, it came swiftly.
True.
The fall of the Elantrians was likewise swift. Change can come with blinding speed, Lord Werin. But those who are prepared can profit quite substantially from it. You say that the fall of Yaskar was building for years. Well, I suggest to you that the Khorati religion has been in decline for a similar amount of time. It used to hold much sway in the East. Now its influence has been relegated to only Teod and Erelon. My lords, I hope you will review my offers with more wisdom than your king. These are difficult times, and those who don't have the Church's support will find life harsh in the coming months. Remember who and what I represent.
Remember Elantris. Do not forget the well of desecration that pollutes our land. They sleep and they wait, clever as always. They wait to capture you, all of you, and drag you into their embrace. You must cleanse the world of them before they cleanse it of you!
Hraithen leaned back in his chair, crossing his fingers before him to show that the meeting was at an end. The nobles left, their troubled faces showing that they understood the difficult decision Hraithen had placed before them. They were a politically weak, relatively unimportant lot, but they were a beginning. As Shudareth gained followers, increasingly important nobles would throw their weight behind Hraithen. Then, when the country finally collapsed beneath a weight of political unrest, economic uncertainty, and martial threats, Hraithen would reward his followers with positions in the new government. The key to reaching that success was still sitting at the back of the meeting, watching quietly. Duke Telrai's heir was stately, his face calm, but his reputation for extravagance spoke of great potential.
My Lord Telrai, a moment, please. I have a special proposal that might be of interest to you.
Sul, I don't think this is a good idea.
Galadon crouched next to Raoden.
Hush!
Raoden peeked around the corner toward the courtyard. The gangs had heard about Raoden's recruitment of Merishe and were convinced that he intended to start his own rival gang. When Raoden and Galadon had arrived the day before to look for newcomers, they had found a group of Aendin's men waiting for them. The reception hadn't been pleasant. Fortunately, they had escaped without any broken bones or stubbed toes. But this time, Raoden intended to be a little more subtle.
What if they're waiting for us again?
They probably are, which is why you should keep your voice down. Come on.
Raoden slipped around the corner and into an alleyway.
I'm not so bored with death that I want to abandon it in favor of an existence of pure pain, Golo.
Galadon, someday you're going to get over this determined pessimism of yours and all of Elantris will collapse from the shock.
Pessimism? Pessimism? Me? Doulas are the most light-hearted, easy-going people in Opelon. We look at each day with... Sul, don't you dare leave when I'm defending myself.
Raoden ignored the large doula. He also tried to ignore his pains, sharp though they were. His new leather shoes helped immensely. Despite Galadon's reservations, Merishe had created a product to match his considerable ego. The shoes were sturdy, with a strong protective sole, but the soft leather from the covers of Galadon's books fit perfectly and didn't rub. Peeking carefully around the corner, Raoden studied the courtyard. Sheor's men weren't visible, but they were probably hiding nearby. Raoden perked up as he saw the city gates swinging open. The day had brought a new arrival. However, he was shocked when the Elantris city guard pushed not one, but three separate white-clothed forms through the gate.
Three? The Sheod is unpredictable, Sul.
This changes everything.
Good. Let's go. The others can have today's offering. Golo?
What? And miss such a grand opportunity? Galadon, I'm disappointed in you.
Burn it, Dolokin.
Don't worry. I have a plan.
Already?
We have to move quickly. Any minute now, one of those three is going to take a step, and then our opening will be gone.
Dolokin.
What are you going to do?
Nothing. You, however, are going to have a nice stroll out there in the courtyard.
What? Sul, you've gone Kayana again. If I go out there, the gangs are going to see me.
Exactly. Just make sure you run very quickly, my friend. We wouldn't want them to catch you.
You're serious?
Unfortunately. Now get moving. Lead them off to the left and I'll do the rest. We'll meet back where we left Marisha.
This foolish idea isn't worth all the dried meat in the world.
Galadon let Rayodin push him into the courtyard. The feral man burst out, forgetting the three newcomers in their hatred of the man who had wronged them just a few days earlier. Galadon shot one final withering look in Rayodin's direction, then took off at a dash, choosing a street at random and leading Shaor's men away. Rayodin gave him a moment, then ran out into the middle of the courtyard.
Which way did he go?
Who?
The large doula! Quickly, man, which way did he go? He has the cure.
The cure?
Of course! It's very rare, but there should be enough for all of us. If you tell me which way he went. Don't you want to get out of here?
The newcomer raised a wavering hand and pointed at the path Galadon had taken.
Come on! Unless we move quickly, we'll lose him forever.
The three newcomers stood for a moment. Then, Rayodin's sense of urgency too much for them. They followed. All three of their first steps, therefore, were to the north, the direction that would have made them the property of Shaor's men. The other two gangs could only watch with frustration as all three dashed away.
What can you do?
Mary is my name, my lord. I was a simple housewife. I have no special skills to speak of.
If you're like any other housewife, then you're probably more skilled than anyone here. Can you weave?
Of course, my lord.
And you?
Rael, a workman, my lord. I spent most of my time building on my master's plantation.
Hauling bricks?
At first, my lord. I spent years learning with the journeymen. I hoped that my master would send me to apprentice.
You're very old to be an apprentice.
I know, my lord. But it was a hope. Not many of the peasantry have room for hopes anymore. Even one so simple.
Rayodin nodded again. The man didn't speak like a peasant, but few people in Aerilon did. 10 years ago, Aerilon had been a land of opportunity, and most of its people had been at least slightly educated.
All right. How about you?
The third newcomer, a well-muscled man with a nose that appeared to have been broken at least a dozen times, regarded Rayodin with hesitant eyes.
Before I answer, I want to know just why I should listen to you.
Because I just saved your life.
I don't understand. What happened to that other man?
He should show up in a few minutes.
But
we weren't really chasing him. We were getting you three out of danger. Marisha, please explain.
The artisan jumped at the chance. With wild gestures, he explained his narrow escape 2 days earlier, making it appear that he had been on the verge of death before Rayodin appeared and helped him to safety. Rayodin smiled. Marisha had a melodramatic soul.
Spirit is perhaps the most trustworthy man that I have ever had the pleasure of knowing. His grace is paralleled only by his intelligence. Please, if you do nothing else, listen to what he has to say.
At the end, even the burly, hook-nosed man was attentive.
My name is Saolin, Lord Spirit, and I was a soldier in Count Eondel's personal legion.
I know Eondel. He's a good man, a soldier himself before he was granted a title. You were probably trained well.
We are the best soldiers in the country, sir.
It isn't hard to best most of the soldiers in our poor country, Saolin. However, I'd match Eondel's legion against soldiers from any nation. I always found them to be men of honor, discipline, and skill, much like their leader. Giving Eondel a title is one of the few intelligent things Iadon has done recently.
As I understand it, my lord, the king didn't have much choice. Eondel has amassed quite a large fortune by hiring out his personal forces to the crown.
That's the truth. Well, Saolin, I am glad to have you. A professional soldier of your skill will certainly make us all feel a lot safer around here.
Whatever your lordship needs, I pledge you my sword. I know little about religion, besides saying my prayers, and I don't really understand what's going on here. But a man who speaks well of Lord Eondel is a good man in my estimation.
I appreciate and accept your protection, friend. But I warn you, this is no easy burden you take upon yourself. I'm quickly amassing enemies in here, and it is going to require a great deal of vigilance to make sure we aren't surprised by an attack.
I understand, my lord, but by Domai, I won't let you down.
And what of us, my lord?
I have a grand project in store for you two as well. Look up and tell me what you see.
Rael raised his eyes to the sky, confused.
I see nothing, my lord. Should I?
Not a thing, Rael. That's the problem. The roof to this building must have fallen in years ago. Despite that, it's one of the largest and least degenerate buildings I've found. I don't suppose your training included some experience in roof building?
It certainly did, my lord. You have materials.
That's going to be the tricky part, Rael. All of the wood in Elantris is either broken or rotted.
That is a problem. Perhaps if we dried out the wood, then mixed it with clay.
It isn't an easy task, Rael. May Eiri?
We'll give it our best try, my lord.
Good. Now, Marishe, please explain to our new friends about what it means to be an Elantrian.
Yes, my lord.
Marishe was eyeing the newcomer's food, which was sitting on a relatively clean section of the floor. The hunger was affecting him already. Raoden carefully chose a few items from offerings, then nodded to the rest.
Divide this up amongst yourselves and eat it. Saving it won't do any good. Hunger is going to start immediately. You might as well get this down before it has time to make you greedy.
The four nodded, and Marishe began to explain the limitations of life in Elantris as he divided the food. Raoden watched for a moment, then turned away to think.
Sul, my Hama would love you. She always complains that I don't get enough exercise.
Ah, welcome back, my friend. I was beginning to worry.
I didn't see you worrying when you shoved me out into that courtyard. Seen worms on hooks treated more kindly. Golo?
But you made such fantastic bait. Besides, it worked. We got the newcomers, and you appear remarkably bruise-free.
A state of being that is most likely a source of grand displeasure to Sheol's dogs.
How did you escape them?
Raoden handed Galadon the loaf of bread he had grabbed for the doula. Galadon regarded it, then ripped it in half and offered one part to Raoden, who held up his hand forestallingly.
Ran into a building with a collapsed set of stairs, then went out the back door. I threw some rocks up onto the roof when Sheol's men entered. After what you did to them the other day, they assumed I was up there. They're probably still sitting there waiting for me.
Smooth.
Somebody didn't leave me much choice.
Galadon continued to eat in quiet, listening to the newcomers discuss their various important duties.
You going to tell all of them that?
What's that?
The newcomers, Sul. You made them all think they are of vital importance, just like Marishe. Shoes are nice, but not a matter of life and death.
People do a better job when they assume they're important.
They're right.
Who?
The other gangs. You are starting your own gang.
Galadon, that is just a tiny part of it. No one accomplishes anything at Elantris. They're all either too busy squabbling over food or contemplating their misery. The city needs a sense of purpose.
We're dead, Sul. What purpose can we have besides suffering?
That's exactly the problem. Everyone's convinced that their lives are over just because their hearts stopped beating.
That's usually a pretty good indication, Sul.
Not in our case, my friend. We need to convince ourselves that we can go on. The Sheyote isn't causing all the pain here. I've seen people on the outside lose hope too, and their souls end up just as emaciated as those poor wretches in the square. If we can restore even a tiny bit of hope to these people, then their lives will improve drastically.
The other gangs are not just going to sit around and watch you steal all their offerings, Sul. They're going to get tired of you very quickly.
Then I'll just have to be ready for them.
Raoden nodded toward the large building around them.
This will make a rather good base of operations, wouldn't you say? It has this open room in the middle with all of those smaller ones at the back.
You could have picked a building with a roof.
Yes, I know, but this one suits my purpose. I wonder what it used to be.
A church. Karathi.
How do you know?
Has the feel, Sul.
Why would there be a Karathi church in Elantris? The Elantrians were their own gods.
But they were very lenient gods. There was supposed to be a grand Karathi chapel here in Elantris, the most beautiful of its kind. It was built as an offering of friendship to the people of Teod.
It seems so odd. Gods of one religion building a monument to Domai.
Like I said, the Elantrians were very lax gods. They didn't really care if the people worshipped them. They were secure in their divinity, until the Riot came along, Golo.
You seem to know quite a bit, Galadon.
And since when has that been a sin? You've lived in K.E. all your life, Sewell. Maybe instead of asking why I know these things, you should wonder why you don't.
Point taken.
Riordan glanced to the side. Mary Shea had disappeared with the newcomers, probably giving them a tour of the place, while he explained what their new Elantrian lives meant.
He's not going to be back anytime soon. Come on, there's something I want to do.
Does it involve running?
Only if they spot us.
I see you there!
Riordan recognized Aeyndin. It was difficult to see. The Shaeod brought profound changes, but Riordan had a knack for faces. The so-called Baron of Elantris was a short man with a sizable paunch and a long drooping mustache that was obviously fake. Aeyndin did not look noble. Of course, few noblemen Riordan knew looked very aristocratic. Regardless, Aeyndin was no baron. The man before Riordan, seated on a throne of gold and presiding over a court of sickly-looking Elantrians, had been called Taeyn. He had been one of K.E.'s finest sculptors before the Shaeod took him, but he had not been of noble blood. The years in Elantris had not been kind to Taeyn. The man had a crazed and incoherent look about his person.
He's mad?
Riordan was crouched inside the window they were using to spy on Aeyndin's court.
We each have our own way of dealing with death, Sewell. The rumors say Aeyndin's insanity was a conscious decision. They say that after being thrown into Elantris, he looked around and said, "There's no way I can face this sane." After that, he declared himself Baron Aeyndin of Elantris and began giving orders.
And people follow him?
Some do. He may be mad, but so is the rest of the world. At least to the eyes of one who's been thrown in here, Golo. Aeyndin is a source of authority. Besides, maybe he was a baron on the outside.
He wasn't. He was a sculptor.
You knew him?
I met him once. Where did you hear the rumors about him?
Can we move back first, Sewell? I'd rather not end up a participant in one of Aeyndin's mock trials and executions.
Mock?
Everything's mock but the axe.
Ah, good idea. I've seen all I needed to.
The two men moved back, and as soon as they were a few streets away from the university, Galadon answered Rayodin's question.
I talk to people, Sewell. That's where I get my information. Granted, the great majority of the city's people are Hoeyd, but there are enough conscious ones around to talk with. Of course, my mouth is what got me in trouble with you. Maybe if I'd kept it shut, I'd still be sitting on those steps enjoying myself, rather than spying on one of the most dangerous men in the city.
Perhaps, but you wouldn't be having half as much fun. You'd be chained to your boredom.
I'm so glad you liberated me, Sewell.
Well, anytime.
Why did you want to see Aeyndin? You couldn't have known you'd recognize him.
If Aeyndin had been a baron from the outside, I would have known him almost immediately.
You're certain?
Riordan nodded absently. Galadon was silent for a few more streets.
Now, Sewell, I'm not very good with these Aeons you Aedalines hold in such esteem. But unless I'm completely wrong, the Aeon for spirit is Rayo.
Yes.
And doesn't the king of Aerilon have a son named Riordan?
He did.
And here you are, Sewell, claiming to know all the barons in Aerilon. You're obviously a man with a good education, and you give commands easily.
You could say that.
Then, to top it all off, you call yourself Spirit. Pretty suspicious, Golo.
Should have picked a different name, huh?
By Dulakin, boy! You're telling me you're the Crown Prince of Aerilon?
I was the Crown Prince of Aerilon, Galadon. I lost the title when I died.
No wonder you're so frustrating. I've spent my entire life trying to avoid royalty, and here I end up with you, burning Dulakin.
No, quiet down. It's not like I'm really royalty. It's been in the family for less than a generation.
That's long enough.
If it helps, my father didn't think I was fit to rule. He tried everything to keep me from the throne.
I'd be scared to see the man Aeyndin found fit to rule. Your father's an idiot. No offense intended.
None taken. And I trust you'll keep my identity secret.
If you wish.
I do. If I'm going to do any good in Elantris, I need to win followers because they like what I'm doing. not because they feel a patriotic obligation.
You could have at least told me, Sul.
You said we shouldn't talk about our past.
True.
Of course, you know what this means.
What?
Now that you know who I was, you have to tell me who you were. It's only fair.
I was a farmer.
A farmer?
And an orchard keeper. I sold my fields and bought an apple farm because I figured it would be easier. You don't have to replant trees every year.
Was it? Easier, I mean.
I thought it was, though I know a couple of wheat farmers that would argue with me until the sun set, Golo.
The larger man looked at Raoden with an insightful eye.
You don't think I'm telling the truth about my past, do you?
I'm sorry, Galadon, but you just don't seem like a farmer to me. You have the build for it, but you seem too...
Intelligent? Sul, I've seen some farmers with minds so sharp you could have used their heads to scythe grain.
I don't doubt that you have, but intelligent or not, those types still tend to be uneducated. You are a learned man, Galadon.
Books, Sul, are a wonderful thing. A wise farmer has time to study, assuming he lives in a country such as Duladin, where men are free.
So, you're going to hold to this farmer's story?
It's the truth, Sul. Before I became an Elantrian, I was a farmer.
Raoden shrugged. Perhaps Galadon had been able to predict the rain, as well as do a number of other eminently practical things. Still, it seemed like there was something more, something he wasn't ready to share yet.
All right. I believe you.
Galadon nodded curtly, his expression saying he was very glad the matter was settled.
Galadon, where are the children?
Children, Sul?
Yes. If the Sheyod strikes randomly, then it should strike children as well as adults.
It does. I've seen babes barely old enough to walk get thrown in those gates.
Then where are they? I only see adults.
The two men strode through the open doors to Raoden's broken-down church.
Elantris is a harsh place, Sul. Children don't last very long here.
Yes, but...
Raoden cut himself off as he saw something flicker in the corner of his eye. He turned with surprise.
A Saeon.
Yes.
Raoden watched the Saeon float slowly through the open ceiling and spin in a lazy circle around the two men.
It's so sad how they just drift around the city like this. It's Aiene.
The Saeon? You recognize it?
Raoden nodded, holding out his hand with a palm up. The Saeon floated over and alighted on his proffered palm for a moment. Then it began to float away, flittering around the room like a careless butterfly.
Aiene was my Saeon before I was thrown in here.
Raoden could see the Aeon at Aiene's center now. The character looked weak somehow. It glowed unevenly, sections of the character very dim, like the blotches on an Elantrian skin, Raoden realized, watching Aiene float away. There was an awkwardness to the Saeon's motion, as if Aiene could barely keep himself upright in the air. He jerked occasionally and constantly moved in slow, dizzy loops. Raoden's stomach turned as he regarded what was left of his friend.
Oh, my dear friend. And I thought the Sheyod had been harsh to me.
Only 5 men responded to Kaiayan's request. Lukel scowled at the meager turnout.
Raoden had as many as 30 men at his meetings before he died. I didn't expect them all to come running, but 5? That's barely worth our time.
It's enough, son.
Kaiayan peeked through the kitchen door.
They may be few in number, but we got the best of the lot. Those are 5 of the most powerful men in the nation, not to mention 5 of the most intelligent. Raoden had a way of attracting clever men to his side.
Kaiayan, you old bear!
The man in the dining room was a stately man with graying lines of silver hair who wore a sharp martial uniform.
You going to feed us or not? Domai knows I only came because I heard you were going to fix some of your roast katathum.
The pig is turning as we speak, Yondel, and I made sure to prepare a double portion for you. Keep your stomach in check for a little while longer.
Who is he?
The Count of Eon Plantation. Lukel, go check on the pork while your cousin and I gossip about our guests.
Yes, father.
Lukel accepted the poker and moved to the fire pit room at the back of the kitchen.
Eondel is the only man besides Raoden that I've ever seen openly oppose the king and get away with it. He's a military genius and owns a small personal army. There are only a couple hundred men in it, but they're extremely well trained.
Next, Kaiyan pointed through the slightly open door toward a man with dark brown skin and delicate features.
That man beside Eondale is Baron Shuden.
Jindoese?
His family took up residence in Aerilon about a century ago, and they've amassed a fortune directing the Jindoese trade routes through the country. When Iadon came to power, he offered them a barony to keep their caravans running. Shuden's father passed away about 5 years ago, and the son is much more traditional than the father ever was. He thinks Iadon's method of rule contradicts the heart of Shu Keseg, which is why he's willing to meet with us.
If his heart is as Jindoese as his skin, Uncle, then he could be a powerful ally indeed.
That's what your husband thought.
Why do you keep referring to Raoden as your husband? I know I'm married, no need to keep pointing it out.
You know it, but you don't believe it yet.
Either Kaiyan didn't see the question in her face, or he simply ignored it, for he continued with his explanations as if he hadn't made an infuriatingly unfair judgment.
Besides Shuden is the Duke Royal of Iael Plantation.
Kaiyan nodded to the oldest man in the room.
His holdings include the port of Aeld, a city that is second only to Kei in wealth. He's the most powerful man in the room, and probably the wisest as well. He's been loath to take action against the king, however. Roael and Iadon have been friends since before the Riod.
Why does he come, then?
Roael is a good man, friendship or not. He knows that Iadon's rule has been terrible for this nation. That, and I suspect he also comes because of boredom.
He engages in traitorous conferences simply because he's bored?
When you've been around as long as Roael, you have trouble finding things to keep you interested. Politics is so ingrained in the Duke that he probably can't sleep at night unless he's involved in at least 5 different wild schemes. He's fabulously wealthy. The only way Iadon keeps ahead is by including national tax revenues in his own earnings.
Who is that sitting next to Duke Roael?
The portly man.
Portly?
Well, that's how we fat men describe one another.
But, Uncle, you're not fat. You're robust.
All right, then. The robust gentleman next to Roael is Count Ehane. You wouldn't know it by watching them, but he and the Duke are very good friends. Either that, or they're very old enemies. I can never remember which it is.
There's a bit of a distinction there, Uncle.
Not really. The two of them have been squabbling and sparring for so long that neither one would know what to do without the other. You should have seen their faces when they realized they were both on the same side of this particular argument. Raoden laughed for days after that first meeting. Apparently, he'd gone to them each separately and gained their support, and they both came to that first meeting with the belief they were outdoing the other.
So why do they keep coming?
Well, they both seem to agree with our point of view, not to mention the fact that they really do enjoy one another's company. That, or they just want to keep an eye on each other. Either way, they help us, so we don't complain.
And the last man?
Edane. Baron of Tai'ai Plantation to the south. I've never liked him, but he's probably one of our strongest supporters.
Why is he so nervous?
Aedon's system of government lends itself well to greed. The better a noble does financially, the more likely he is to be granted a better title. So, the minor nobles squabble like children, each one trying to find new ways to milk their subjects and increase their holdings. The system also encourages financial gambling. Edain's fortune was never very impressive. His holdings border the chasm, and the lands nearby just aren't very fertile. In an attempt to gain a bit more status, Edain made some risky investments, but lost them. Now he doesn't have the wealth to back his nobility.
He might lose his title?
Not might. He's going to lose it as soon as the next tax period comes around, and Iadon realizes just how poor the barons become. Edain has about 3 months to either discover a gold mine in his backyard or overthrow Iadon's system of allocating noble titles. Edain is desperate, and desperate people do things completely out of character. I don't trust him, but of all the men in that room, he's probably the most anxious for us to succeed.
Which would mean... What exactly do these men expect to accomplish?
They'll do about anything to get rid of this silly system that requires them to prove their wealth. Noblemen will be noblemen. They're worried about maintaining their place in society.
Kyarian, we could have raised our own hogs and had them slaughtered in the time this is taking you.
Good meals take time, Roil. If you think you can do better, you're welcome to cook your own.
I assure that won't be necessary.
Fortunately, Roil didn't have to wait much longer. Kyarian soon proclaimed the pig cooked to perfection and ordered Lukel to begin cutting it. The rest of the meal quickly followed. A feast so large, it would even have satisfied Kayice, if her father hadn't ordered her and the other children to visit their aunt's house for the evening.
You're still determined to join us?
Yes. I can handle myself, Uncle. Roil isn't the only one who likes a good challenge.
All right, then.
Kyarian picked up a large, steaming bean dish.
Let's go.
Kyarian led the way through the kitchen doors, and then, after setting down the plate, gestured to Serini.
Everyone, I'm sure you've all met my niece, Serini, Princess of our realm.
Serini curtsied to Duke Roil, then nodded to the others before taking her seat.
I was wondering who that extra seat was for. Niece Kyarian? You have connections to the Teoish throne?
Oh, come now, Roil. Don't tell me you don't know that Kyarian is old Avanteo's brother. My spies told me that years ago.
I was being polite, Ehane. It's bad form to spoil a man's surprise just because your spies are efficient.
Well, it's also bad form to bring an outsider to a meeting of this nature.
One would think that after such a drastic reduction in your numbers, my lord, you would appreciate additional support, no matter how unfamiliar or how feminine it may be.
The table went silent at her words. 10 eyes studying her through the steam rising from Kyarian's several masterpieces. Serini felt herself grow tense beneath their unaccepting gaze. These men knew just how quickly a single error could bring destruction upon their houses. One did not dabble lightly with treason in a country where civil upheaval was a fresh memory.
I knew it. My dear, no person could possibly be as stupid as you made yourself out to be. Not even the queen herself is that empty-headed.
I believe you're wrong about Queen Ishane, your grace. She's simply energetic.
If that's what you want to call it.
You may be a fine actress, my dear, but I see no reason why you should attend this dinner. Through no fault of your own, you are young and inexperienced. The things we say tonight will be very dangerous to hear, and even more dangerous to remember. An unnecessary set of ears, no matter how pretty the head to which they are attached, will not help.
Serini narrowed her eyes, trying to decide whether the Duke was attempting to provoke her or not. Roil was as hard a man to read as any she had ever met.
You'll find that I'm hardly inexperienced, my lord. In Teod, we don't shelter our women behind a curtain of weaving and embroidering. I've spent years serving as a diplomat.
True. But you are hardly familiar with the delicate political situations here in Aerilan.
I have found, my lord, that a fresh, unbiased opinion is an invaluable tool in any discussion.
The still nervous Edain filled his plate.
Don't be silly, girl. I'm not going to risk my safety simply because you want to assert your liberated nature.
I beseech you, my lords, answer me a question. Is girl the proper title for one who, had things turned out a bit differently, might have been our queen?
Forks stopped on the way to mouths, and once again Serini found herself the focus of the room's attention. This time, however, the looks were slightly more appreciative. Kyarian nodded, and Lukel shot her an encouraging smile.
I warn you, my lords, forbid her or accept her as you will, but do not treat her with disrespect. Her Aerilish title is no stronger and no more flimsy than our own. Where we ignore one, we must ignore all others.
I applaud your caution, my lords. You have good reason to be careful. You have lost your patron, the only man who could have given you a measure of protection. Remember, however, that I am his wife. I'm no substitute for the prince, but I am still a connection to the throne. Not just this throne, but others as well.
That's well and good, Serini. But connections and promises will do us little good in the face of the king's wrath.
Little good is not the same as no good, my lord. My lord Duke, I will never know the man that I now call my husband. You all respected, and if I am to believe, my uncle loved Raoden. But I, who should have come to love him best, can never even meet him. This work in which you are involved was his passion. I want to be part of it. If I cannot know Raoden, at least let me share his dreams.
Roiel watched her for a second, and she knew that he was measuring her sincerity. The Duke was not a man to be fooled by mock sentimentality.
I have no problems with her staying.
Neither do I.
Serini looked at the others. Lucel was smiling openly at her speech, and the stately mercenary, Lord Eondel, was nearly in tears.
I give my assent to the lady.
Well, if Roiel wants her here, then I have to object out of principle. But happily, it looks as if I'm outvoted. I get tired of looking at the same crusty old faces anyway.
Then she stays?
She stays.
Kaiyan still hadn't touched his meal. He wasn't the only one. Neither Shuden nor Eondel had begun to eat either. As soon as the debate ended, Shuden bowed his head in a short prayer, then turned to eating.
Kaiyan, this is by far the best meal I've had in decades.
You humble me, Roiel.
Kaiyan apparently avoided calling the others by their titles, but oddly, none of them seemed to mind.
I agree with Lord Roiel, Kaiyan. No chef in this country can outdo you.
Irulan is a large place, Eondel. Be careful not to encourage me too much, lest you find someone better and disappoint me.
Nonsense.
I can't believe that you make it all by yourself. I'm absolutely certain that you have a fleet of Jaedorian chefs hiding beneath one of those counters back there.
Just because it keeps an army of men to keep you fed, Ahane, doesn't mean that a single cook isn't satisfactory for the rest of us. Still, Kaiyan, it is very odd of you to insist on doing this all yourself. Couldn't you at least hire an assistant?
I enjoy it, Roiel. Why would I let someone else steal my pleasure?
Besides, my lord, it gives the king chest pains every time he hears that a man as wealthy as my father does something as mundane as cook.
Quite clever. Dissidence through subservience.
All I know, my lords, is that a man can take care of himself and his family quite easily without any assistance, no matter how wealthy he supposedly is.
Supposedly, my friend. The little bit you let us see is enough to earn you a barony, at least. Who knows? Maybe if you told everyone how much you're really worth, we wouldn't have to worry about Hyadon. You'd be king.
Your assumptions are a bit inflated, Eondel. I'm just a simple man who likes to cook.
A simple man who likes to cook, and whose brother is King of Teod, whose niece is now the daughter of two kings, and whose wife is a ranked noblewoman in our own court.
I can't help that I'm related to important people. Merciful Domai gives us each different trials.
Speaking of trials...
Eondel turned his eyes on Serini.
Has your ladyship decided what to do for her trial yet?
Trial, my lord?
Yes.
He's talking about your widow's trial.
Don't tell me you expect her to perform one of those, Roiel. She never even met Raoden. It's preposterous to expect her to go through mourning, let alone a trial.
Would one of you please explain exactly what this trial is?
When an Aerialish noblewoman is widowed, my lady, she is expected to perform a trial.
So what am I supposed to do?
Oh, hand out some food or blankets to the poor. No one expects you to take any real interest in the process. It's just one of the traditions that Aedon decided to hold over from the old days. The Elantrians used to do something similar whenever one of their kind died. I never liked the custom myself. It seems to me we shouldn't encourage the people to look forward to our deaths. Doesn't bode well for an aristocrat's popularity to be at its greatest just after he dies.
I think it's a fine tradition, Lord Ahane.
You would, Eondel. You're so conservative that even your socks are more traditional than the rest of us.
I can't believe no one's told me about it.
Well, perhaps somebody would have mentioned it to you if you didn't spend all of your time holed up in the palace or in Kaiyan's house.
What else am I supposed to do?
Irulan has a fine court, Princess. I believe there have been two balls since you've arrived, and there is another happening as we speak.
Well, why didn't anyone invite me?
Because you're in mourning. Besides, the invitations only go out to men, who in turn bring their sisters and wives.
Oh, you people are so backward.
Not backward, Your Highness. Just traditional. If you like, we could have some men invite you.
Wouldn't that look bad? Me, not even a weak widow, accompanying some young bachelor to a party?
She has a point.
Why don't you all take me?
Us?
Yes, you. Your lordships are old enough that people won't talk much. You'll just be introducing a young friend to the joys of court life.
Many of these men are married, Your Highness.
What a coincidence. So am I.
Don't worry about honor, Shudane. I'll make the princess's intentions known. And as long as she doesn't go with any one of us too often, no one will infer much from it.
Then it's settled. I'll be expecting to hear from each of you, my lords. It's essential that I get to these parties. If I'm ever going to fit into Aerilan, then I'll need to get to know the aristocracy.
There was general agreement, and the conversation turned to other topics, such as the upcoming lunar eclipse. As they spoke, Serini realized that her question about the mysterious trial hadn't yielded much information. She would have to corner Kaiyan later. Only one man wasn't enjoying the conversation, or apparently the meal. Lord Edain had filled his plate, but had barely taken a few bites. Instead, he poked at his food with dissatisfaction.
I thought we had decided not to meet anymore.
The others paused, turning toward Edain.
We had decided not to meet for a while, Lord Edain. We never intended to stop meeting completely.
You should be happy, Edain. You of all people should be eager to keep these meetings going. How long is it before the next taxing period arrives?
I believe it is on the first day of Eostek, Lord Ahain.
Which would put it just under 3 months away. Thank you, Iandel. You're such a useful man to have around. Always knowing things that are proper and such. Anyway, 3 months, Edain. How are the coffers doing? You know how picky the king's auditors are.
Gentlemen, we are not here to squabble. Remember that we all have much to gain from reform, including stability for our country and freedom for our people.
The good Baron does bring up a valid concern, however. Despite this young lady's promise of aid, we are completely exposed without Raoden. The people loved the prince. Even if Iadon had discovered our meetings, he could never have taken action against Raoden.
We don't have the power to oppose the king anymore. We were gaining strength before. It probably wouldn't have been long before we had enough of the nobility to go public. Now, however, we have nothing.
You still have a dream, my lord. That's hardly nothing.
A dream? The dream was Raoden's, my lady. We were just along to see where he took us.
I can't believe that, Lord Ahain.
Perhaps Her Highness would tell us what that dream is.
You are intelligent men, dear lords. You have the brains and the experience to know that a country cannot withstand the stress that Iadon is placing on it. Aerilan is not a business to be run with a grip of steel. It is much more than its production minus its costs. The dream, my lords, is an Aerilan whose people work with her king instead of against him.
A fine observation, princess.
Roile turned to the others and they continued talking, every one of them politely ignoring Serini. They had allowed her into the meeting, but they obviously didn't intend to let her join the discussion. She sat back with annoyance.
Having a goal is not the same thing as having the means to accomplish it. I believe that we should wait. To let my old friend run himself into a corner before we move in to help.
But Iadon will destroy Aerilan in the process, Your Grace. The more time we give him, the harder it will be to recover.
I do not see another option, Lukel.
You have a point, Roile. The prince's original plan will never work now. We won't be able to pressure the king unless we have at least half of the nobility and their fortunes on our side.
There is another way, my lords.
What is that, Iondo?
It would take me less than 2 weeks to gather the Legion from their watchpoints along the nation's highways. Monetary might isn't the only kind of power.
Your mercenaries could never stand against Aerilan's armies. Iadon's military might be small compared to those of some kingdoms, but it's far larger than your few hundred men. Especially if the king calls in the Elantra City Guard.
Yes, Lord Ahank, you are correct. However, if we strike quickly, while Iadon is still ignorant of our intentions, we could get my legion into the palace and take the king hostage.
Your men would have to fight their way into the king's quarters. Your new government would be born out of the blood of the old, as Iadon's rule was birthed from the death of Elantris. You would set the cycle again for another fall, Lord Eomdel. As soon as one revolution achieves its goal, another will begin to scheme. Blood, death, and coups will only lead to further chaos. There must be a way to persuade Iadon without resorting to anarchy.
There is.
Annoyed eyes turned Serini's direction.
I agree. And that way is to wait.
No, my lord. I am sorry, but that is not the answer. I have seen the people of Aerilan, and while there's still hope in their eyes, it is growing weak. Give Iadon time, and he'll create the despondent peasants he desires.
Speak, princess.
My lords, you've been trying to find a way to overthrow Iadon's system of rule, a system that equates wealth with ability to lead. You claim it's unwieldy and unfair, that its foolishness is a torture to the Aerilish people.
Yes. And?
Well, if Iadon's system is so bad, why worry about overthrowing it? Why not let the system overthrow itself?
What do you mean, Lady Serini?
Turn Iadon's own creation against him and force him to acknowledge its faults. Then, hopefully, you can work out one that is more stable and satisfactory.
Interesting, but impossible. Perhaps Raodin could have done it, but we are too few.
No, you're perfect. What we want to do, my lords, is make the other aristocrats jealous. That won't work if we have too many on our side.
Speak on.
What is the biggest problem with Iadon's system?
It encourages the lords to treat their people brutally. King Iadon threatens the noblemen, taking away the titles of those who do not produce. So, in turn, the lords grow desperate and they beat extra effort out of their people.
It is an unconscionable arrangement, one based on greed, fear, rather than loyalty.
Have any of you looked at Aerilan's production charts over the last 10 years?
Is there such a thing?
We keep them in Teod. Would you be surprised to find, my lords, that Aerilan's level of production has plummeted since Iadon took control?
Not at all. We've had quite the decade of misfortune.
Kings make their own misfortune, Lord Ahane. The saddest thing about Iadon's system is not what it does to the people, nor is it the fact that it destroys the morality of the country. No. Most pitiful is the fact that it does both of these things without making the noblemen any richer. We have no slaves in Teod, my lords, and we get along just fine. In fact, not even Fjordan uses a serf-based system anymore. They found something better. They discovered that a man will work much more productively when he works for himself.
Continue.
The planting season is upon us, my lords. I want you to divide your land amongst your peasants. Give them each a section of field, and tell them they can keep 10% of whatever that land produces. Tell them that you will even let them buy their homes and the land they occupy.
That would be a very difficult thing to do, young princess.
I'm not done yet. I want you to feed your people well, my lords. Give them clothing and supplies.
We are not beasts, Serini. Some lords treat their peasants poorly, but we would never accept such into our fellowship. The people of our lands have food to eat and clothing to keep them warm.
That may be true, my lord, but the people must feel that you love them. Do not trade them to other nobles or squabble over them. Let the peasants know that you care, and they will give you their hearts and their sweat. Prosperity need not be limited to a small percentage of the population.
It will be risky.
If this doesn't work, you lose a bit of money and some pride. If the Honorable General's plan doesn't work, you lose your heads.
She has a point.
A good one. I will do it.
That's easy for you to say, Eomdel. You can always just order your legion to work on the farms when the peasants turn lazy.
My men are policing our country's highways, Lord Edain. Their service there is invaluable.
And you are handsomely rewarded for it. I have no income but that of my farms. And while my lands look big, I've got that blasted crack running right through the center of them. I don't have any room for laziness. If my potatoes don't get planted, weeded, and harvested, then I will lose my title.
You'll probably lose it anyway.
Enough, Ehain. Edain has a point. How can we be certain the peasants will produce more if we give them so much liberty?
I have found the Aerilish peasantry to be a lazy, unproductive lot. The only way I can get enough work out of them is by force.
They aren't lazy, my lord. They are angry. 10 years is not so long a time, and these people can remember what it is to be their own masters. Give them the promise of autonomy, and they will work hard to achieve it. You will be surprised how much more profitable an independent man is than a slave who thinks of nothing more than his next meal. After all, which situation would make you more likely to be productive?
Much of what you say makes sense.
But Lady Serene's evidence is vague. Times were different before the Riode. The Elantrians provided food and the land could survive without a peasant class. We no longer have that luxury.
Then help me find evidence, my lord. Give me a few months, and we will create our own proof.
We will consider your words.
No, Lord Roile. You will make a decision. Beneath everything else, I believe that you are a patriot. You know what is right, and this is it. Don't tell me you've never felt any guilt for what you've done to this country.
Serene regarded Roile anxiously. The elderly Duke had impressed her, but there was no way for her to be sure he felt ashamed for Aerilan. She had to depend on her impression that his heart was good, and that in his long life he had seen and understood how far his country had fallen. The collapse of Elantris had been a catalyst, but the greed of the nobility had been the true destroyer of this once grand nation.
We have all been blinded at one time or another by Aedon's promises of wealth. I will do as Her Highness asks.
Shudin turned his eyes on Roile and nodded. His acceptance had given the Duke an opportunity to agree, without losing too much face.
All right. You're a wise man, Lord Shudin. If you find merit in this plan, then I will follow it as well.
I suppose we have no choice.
It's better than waiting, Lord Edain.
True. I agree as well.
That leaves me. Oh my, what shall I do?
Lord Roile agreed only grudgingly, my lord. Don't tell me you're going to do the same.
What a delightful girl you are. Well then, I guess I have to accept wholeheartedly, with the admonition that I knew she was right all along. Now, Kyian, please tell me you haven't forgotten dessert. I've heard such lovely things about your confections.
Forget dessert? Ehain, you wound me.